Okay, welcome back to the second year in our series. I'm glad to see some of the names, same names that I recognized from last week. Last week we discussed the concept of Gilgulim, of reincarnation, transmigration of souls. And now we're going to move towards another concept in terms of life after death. And this is the concept which really starts at the end of days, and that is the concept of Tchiyat HaMetim, the physical and bodily resurrection of the dead. And this is, I think, an important concept that touches on a lot of issues. It touches on fundamentals of faith. It touches on our understanding of reward and punishment. And it touches on issues of biblical and Talmudic interpretation. So let us look at Tchiyat HaMetim, resurrection of the dead. Now, we know that the Rambam famously listed what he thought were the 13 fundamental principles of belief. And on that list is Tchiyat HaMetim, the resurrection of the dead. So it seems to me this is a crucial concept for Judaism. The Rambam was really working off the Mishnah. For the most part, the Gemara does not so much focus on fundamental beliefs. It doesn't really give us a list. But there is a Mishnah at the end of Masechet Sanhedrin that's quite relevant. And it's a Mishnah that's fairly well known. The Mishnah says, "Kol Yisrael Yishlam Chelik L'Olam Haba." The whole Jewish people, that all the Jewish people have a share in the world to come. All the Jewish people have a share in the world to come. And the Mishnah then goes on to list those that are exceptions. So among the exceptions, it says that it's among the exceptions, it has the certain characters and certain beliefs. So, for example, it says the following three people: Omer, Ein Tchiyat HaMetim in HaTorah. Now, pay attention to the phraseology. There is no resurrection in the Torah. Or Ein Torah Min HaShemayim. You deny the divinity of Torah. Or Apikoros, the Epicurean or the heretic. These are three people who do not have a share in the world to come. So here it seems that we have not such an exhaustive list, and lo and behold, Tchiyat HaMetim is on that list of three things that apparently exclude a Jew from Olam Haba. Now we'll come back to what it's doing on that list in a second, but there's an interesting inference to make from the wording. Again, the wording was, Ha'omer ein Tchiyat HaMetim min HaTorah. It doesn't say, Ha'omer ein Tchiyat HaMetim, which would be parallel to the one who denies Torah min HaShemayim. So this leads Rashi to make a comment that's quite surprising, and we'll see that later authorities simply refuse to accept that Rashi could have meant it. Rashi says, even if one accepts belief in Tchiyat HaMetim, but denies that it's in the Torah, right, that would also be heretical. Right? In Rashi's formulation, Rashi says, Moda umamin shechiyu hamitim, you believe that the dead will be revived, ela delo remiza boraita, you say it's not hinted at in the Torah. Now, this is a bit of a surprising thing, that one would have the right belief, but somehow not see a verse for it in the Torah, and therefore be branded a heretic. To make it even more surprising, and this is a topic we may discuss at more length next week, the Torah, for the most part, focuses on this worldly and physical reward and punishment. If one thinks about the classic Torah passages about reward and punishment, so the Shema passages would be obvious, the second paragraph of the Shema. It's very this worldly, rain and crops and enemies. The same is true about the passages at the end of Sefer Vayikra and the end of Sefer Zohar and the Tokacha. It is also very this-worldly in terms of reward and punishment. That's a topic we'll discuss perhaps next week, why the Torah focuses on this-worldly and not other-worldly. But it makes Rashi's position more difficult. It seems hard to believe that if you say, I believe in the tradition of Tchiyat HaMetim, of physical resurrection, I simply don't see it in Chumash or in Tanakh, that this would make you a heretic. And indeed, a later authority, the Be'er Sheva, by Rabbi Yisachar Ber Eilenberg, which is a very fascinating work. The Be'er Sheva, he decided that he's going to help out for tractates of the Talmud, where Tosfot did not write. And I think a lot of later authorities saw their job as filling in where interpretation is missing. So he picked certain tractates, such as Horeyot and Tamid, to fill in the blanks. Sanhedrin is quite an interesting choice. All of Sanhedrin has Tosfot as a commentary, but the last parak of Sanhedrin, called Hachelek, the very famous Perek, which is all stories and a lot about the Messianic era, this Tosfot did not comment on. So So Rav Yisachar Eidelberg in his Be'er Sheva comments there, and he says, it can't be Rashi said that. It simply can't be. It must be a mistake. And he quotes a number of arguments. One argument he cites is that other sources of this, there are other versions of this besides the version printed in our Mishnah, just say HaOmer Ein Tchiyat HaMeitim. Don't say HaOmer Ein Tchiyat HaMeitim Min HaTorah. This is a version in several Midrashei Chazal. This is a version that the Rambam cites. So it seems that Min HaTorah is not really part of the essence yet. It's really the belief per se. That's his first point. He also points out even the Gemara's logic. The Gemara says, why should a person lose Olam Haba because they deny Tchiyat HaMeitim? So this Gemara in Sanhedrin says, well, it's Midah Keneged Midah, poetic justice. Here, you don't believe in the world to come, so that cuts off your access to the world to come. Now, whether before we evaluate that argument, points out Rabbi Eilenberg, that clearly is focusing on whether you believe in resurrection per se, not on whether it's from the Torah. Right? Again, the poetic justice is, you think there is no such thing, so you won't get to go there. Furthermore, he points out, and this is a very interesting argument, there's an important work, which we'll come back to shortly, by Rav Yosef Albo called the Sefer Yikarim. And since I'm already mentioning it tangentially, I'd like to explain a bit more about it. I mentioned before that the Rambam says there are 13 fundamental principles of belief. Rav Yosef Albo, in his Sefer Yikarim, which even the name, the Book of Principles, does two very important things. First of all, he claims that there are truly three fundamental principles of belief, but one should not be misled. It's not a debate whether there are 13 or three. It's more of a categorization issue. If one breaks up the Rambam's 13, one will very quickly realize that it's really three categories. For example, the Rambam will have, God exists, he's eternal, he's not corporeal. We could call all of those just God, that's one. Secondly, God communicates to people, there's prophets, there was a revelation at Sinai. All of that could be encompassed under Torah Min HaShemayim, the divine revelation of Torah. Finally, all beliefs about Providence and Mashiach and the like could all be incorporated under reward and punishment. So Yosef Albo famously says there's really three beliefs. Religion, Judaism, depends on the existence of God, the divinity of the Torah, and that there's divine providence. Okay, so that's one important thing. Rav Yosef Albo also tries to figure out what should make something an Ikar, which is also quite interesting. The Rambam gives you this list, but does not give you a methodology. He doesn't say what should count as an Ikar. He just says, these are the 13 principles of fundamental Jewish belief. Rav Yosef Albo has a logic to what should get counted, which is also interesting. I'll leave aside for now. Finally, Rav Yosef Albo says, let's say someone is doing the best they can to understand Torah. They're a devout Jew, and they understand, and they misread a pasuk and get the wrong idea. So Rav Albo says, this would not brand you a heretic, right? You're doing the best you can, to use halachic terminology, the kofer v'shogeg, the inadvertent one with an erroneous fundamental belief, would not be considered a kofer. So now, says the Be'er Sheva, according to Rav Yosef Albo, there's almost a kal v'chomer, all the more so. If I could read a pasuk that says God has a hand, and mistakenly conclude that God is physical, and I'm not a heretic, so all the more so if I actually believe the right thing. I believe in resurrection, I simply don't see the verse for it, I'm certainly not a heretic. So again, the Be'er Sheva has three arguments against Rashi's reading. One more source in this and we'll move on. The Tiferet Yisrael of Yisrael Lifshitz is also a work very well worth knowing. Rav Lifshitz wrote a classic commentary on the Mishnah, the Tiferet Yisrael, and he's wide-ranging in the issues he deals with there. He was a person, Rav Yisrael Lifshitz lived in Germany in the 1800s, and he had tremendous intellectual curiosity. Just one brief example, in the middle of the 8th paragraph of Yoma, when it discusses various diseases, he takes time out to say what the cures are. If ready scurvy comes up, I'll tell you what you should do if you get scurvy. Eat citrus fruits. So it's quite interesting, Parish. At the end of Sanhedrin, he has a long essay on the resurrection. It's called Drush Or HaChayim. And in that essay, he gives a different reading of Rashi. First, he basically sides with the Be'er Sheva. But his reading of Rashi is as follows. And here, we have to return to the Gemara for a second. I mentioned before that the Torah's reward and punishment tends to focus mostly on physical, this-worldly bounty and problems. However, the Gemara tries to derive Tchiyat HaMeitim, the resurrection, the world to come, from Be'er Sukkim, and quite frankly, some of them in the Chumash are not very convincing. Just to give you one example, so the Gemara in Sanhedrin is looking for sources that the resurrection is in the Bible, and it says, oh, there's a Hincha shochet im avotecha v'kam. Now that's not really the end of the pasuk, but if you read it that way, Hincha shochet im avotecha, you are going to lie in the earth with your forefathers, v'kam, and you will arise again. Here the Gemara claims the source for Tziyat HaMikim. However, if one reads the whole, you're going to lie with your forefathers. V'kam ha'am v'zana. And after your death, Moshe, the people will get up and will stray. So v'kam in the pasuk is not, in the simple reading, a reference to Moshe at all, but is a reference to the people. And then, of course, this verse would not be a source for Tziyat HaMikim. So the Gemara seems to pick verses, at first glance, first few verses, that really don't prove the case. And indeed, I would argue the Gemara is well aware of this. There's even an example in the Gemara where one of the Tanaim says to the Romans, I have proofs from this pasuk both for a prophecy and for the resurrection. Because look, God is saying what will happen in the future. And Hincha Shem Chayevim Avotecha Vekam, you're going to lie with your forefathers and you're going to die. Vekam, you'll come back up. And then the Romans say, but maybe you shouldn't read the pasuk that way. Maybe read it, Vekam Ha'am, the people will arise after your death, Moshe. And then the Tana, I think it's Rabbi Yeshua, says, okay, I only proved prophecy, I did not prove the resurrection. Now that quick giving in, I think, indicates that there was an understanding that this is not really such a good proof. In fact, I'm going to just raise a question, which I don't have a great answer for. It's not clear to me why the Gemara starts with some very questionable proofs, and at the end there are actually some quite good proofs that could have been cited, and I'll mention them right now, and this will return to the Tiferet Yisrael. There are some verses in Nach which actually are quite explicit about the resurrection. Okay, the most famous one, perhaps, is in Sefer Daniel. Sefer Daniel, the last parak in Sefer Daniel, parak Yudet, pasuk bet, says very, very simply, V'rabim mishenei admatar tzakitu. Right, many of those that are sleeping in the ground will get up. Right, so Sefer Daniel envisions those returning from death, some a bodily return. One has a similar verse in Yeshayahu parak Chavav. Again, Yeshayahu says, Yichayu meitim. Nivlati yukumun, right, the dead will arise, the carcass will emerge. Hakiti v'ranu shokhnei apa, right, wake up those that dwell in the dust. So you have an explicit pasuk in Daniel about resurrection, life after death. You have an explicit pasuk in Yeshayahu. In theory, one could add more to this. For example, the famous nevuah of the dry bones in Yechezkel envisions a revival. Now, one could claim it's just a poetic imagery and it's really about the Jewish people's revival, but nonetheless, it is suggestive, that imagery, right? The dead coming back to life. Finally, there's one pasuk in Chumash proper that arguably would also be a source for the resurrection, and that's a pasuk in Parshas Hazinu, in Dvarim, Perek Lamedet, Pasuk Lamedet. And there the Chumash says, God says, really, Ani Amit V'Achayeh, I put to death and I bring back to life. Machatzi v'ani'arpa. I smite, I cause an illness, and I heal. Now, the first part of the pasuk, ani amit v'achaya, I cause to come to death. And I kill and I revive. And I bring other people to life. However, if one works off a literary parallel to the second part of the pasuk, what was the second part of the pasuk? I make Isik and Ahil. We would think that's about the same person, right? Ani machatzi v'achaya. If one reads that back into the first part, that would also be about the same person. I caused to die, but I also revived. So to sum up what we have here, it seems like there are psukim certainly in Nach, and maybe in Chumash as well, that would be explicit about Tziyat HaMikim. So when the Tzari Yisrael wants to defend Rashi, or interpret Rashi, he suggests that Rashi is referring to these psukim, not the psukim the Gemara said. Right? The psukim the Gemara said, it simply can't be. Tzvi Yisrael actually says a very sharp phrase. He basically says, anyone with eyes to see will understand that Hincha Shochem Avotecha V'Kam is really not a source for Tzvi HaMikim. So let us sum up the first part of our shiur, and then we'll move on to part two. The Rambam says that resurrection of the dead is a fundamental principle belief. There's a good source for this in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, one of the three categories of people who, based on beliefs, seem to be excluded from Olam Haba. Rashi seems to read very carefully, Ha'omer ein tchiyat ha'metim min ha'Torah. One needs not only to believe it, but to say it's from the Torah. the Be'er Sheva gives some good arguments that can't be, right? Other sources don't have Min HaTorah. It doesn't seem to be the Midah Keneged Midah argument of the Gemara. Rav Yosef Albo says that if you're a heretic inadvertently, you're not liable, all the more so if you have the right beliefs, but simply don't see a Pasuk for it. So the Be'er Sheva is very convincing, I think. Finally, we have Tiferet Yisrael with a new reading of Rashi. Rashi is not referring to the verses the Gemara cites at first, but to other verses that are more explicit. Now, I should clarify, the Gemara does cite two of the more explicit verses I mentioned. It does, at the end of the conversation, in Sanhedrin Tzadibet, it does cite the verse in Daniel, right, that those that dwell on the earth will come back. And it does cite the verse in Hazinu, which arguably also conveys resurrection. There's a question I don't know the answer to, which is, why does the Gemara not cite the most obvious verses right away? Now, it could be we wanted a pasuk in Chumash, that's why we don't cite Daniel and Yishayahu, that might be what's going on, but it's still something I find quite surprising, that the Gemara has more creative and fanciful ways of getting Tchiyat HaMetim without citing the more explicit psukim in Daniel and Yishayahu right off the bat. Daniel only gets cited at the very end of the conversation. Okay, that's part one. Now, let us move on to part two of the shiur. Now, the Mishnah mentions, again, Tchiyat HaMetim. But one could question whether Tchiyat HaMetim is really what it means, specifically the physical resurrection of the dead, or it stands for something else. Let's remember how the Mishnah starts. The Mishnah starts, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelek Lo Mabah. Every Jew has a share in the world to come, unless you lose it in some of the various ways, including denying Tchiyat HaMetim. And the Gemara's logic was, why do you miss out on Olam Haba? Well, the Gemara said it was poetic justice. It was Midah, Keneged Midah. You deny there is a world to come, you don't get to it. Now that seems to take Tchiyat HaMetim in a broader fashion here. We are not talking about the resurrection only, but we are talking about the whole world to come, right? That's the topic of the mission, who gets to the world to come. So here there are two readings of it that I'm aware of. One reading is of the Ran. The Ran reads that, no, it's Tchiyat HaMetim more simply. It means the resurrection of the dead. However, the resurrection of the dead is the preface for Olam Haba. You get to Olam Haba through Tchiyat HaMetim, which is a point we'll come back to. Does one need to undergo Tchiyat HaMetim prior to getting to the world to come? So the Ran says you do, and therefore it works out very nicely. Right, first, the mission describes denial of Tchiyat HaMetim, because that's a prerequisite to Olam Haba. Again, why it's a prerequisite, we will see shortly. However, Rav Yosef Albo takes it differently. We've mentioned Rav Albo in the past, and I mentioned that he says there are three fundamental categories of Jewish belief. If one thinks about it, and Rav Yosef Albo points this out, this works beautifully in the very Mishnah we read. Again, let's remember the three categories of the Mishnah. You deny the Apikoros, the one who denies Torah Min HaShemayim, and the one who denies Tchiyat HaMetim. Now, let's take Tchiyat HaMetim not as the detail of the physical bodily resurrection, but as a symbol for reward and punishment, life after death in general, which would include Olam Haba and Mashiach and the like. If one takes it that way, then Rav Albo says, this Mishnah is exactly what I've been trying to teach you. What do we have in this Mishnah? You deny Tchiyat HaMetim, that's reward and punishment. You deny Torah Min HaShemayim, the divinity of the Torah, divine revelation. And the Apikoros could simply be taken to mean the one who denies God. And indeed, says Rav Yosef Albo, this is in the Sefer Ikarim, in the first Mam. He says, who's the Apikoros? He says there's a school of Epicureans, Choshev Shaholam Nafal B'mikre, who think that the world came through a happenstance. They deny the divine creator. So now this Mishnah is just perfect for Rav Albo. The Mishnah here has the three principal beliefs he says are fundamental. Belief in God, divine revelation, and the afterlife, i.e. reward and punishment. So first of all, this Mishnah is perfect for him. Second of all, we could see that he's taking Tchiyat HaMetim to not mean Tchiyat HaMetim specifically, but the whole world of reward and punishment. That's what's going on in this Mishnah. It's a reference to denying, essentially, divine providence and divine justice. Okay, so we have this Mishnah as a source for why it's fundamental. We now have the Ran saying it's talking about Tchiyat HaMetim, But that's because that's a prerequisite for Olam Haba. And we have Rabbi Albo, our reward and punishment. Now here Rabbi Albo makes one other point that's quite fascinating, and it's a point hopefully we'll be able to come back to as well, which is, why would Tchiyat HaMetim be fundamental? Now, here, the fact that reward and punishment is fundamental, we can understand. Right, we believe in a just God. Arguably, a just God is someone who is going to reward the righteous and punish the wicked. This is something that does not seem to fully happen in our current existence. So we would need another existence for God to work that out. So for the workings of divine justice, for divine perfection, it makes sense that we would need Olam Haba. One could formulate this point slightly differently and say it's needed for a person to achieve Shleimut. That in our current state of affairs, right, the soul is striving for a certain spiritual perfection. And given the limitations of our current existence, it is not really able to achieve that. And then the world to come would give us the avenue and the opportunity to do so. So these are various ways why the world to come per se, some kind of Karba Onesh, Olam Haba, would be crucial. It's not obvious that a bodily resurrection per se is crucial. And indeed, even though Rav Albo thinks one has to believe in it, Rav Albo does explicitly say it's not based on pure logic. Okay, this is a later chapter in the Sefer Karim. This is, again, in Mamar Aleph, Perachot Gimel. I should just point out, the structure of the Sefer Karim is four books. The last three are, he goes through his three Ikarim, right? Book two is existence of God. Book three is revelation. Book four is reward and punishment. Book one is what I mentioned, the science, the methodology of what should be an Ikar. And here, if you excuse one more tangent, so interesting, it's hard for me to hold back. On the Rambam's list of 13, he does not have free will. Now this is striking, free will seems to be a pretty basic Jewish belief. So there are questions why the Rambam does not count it. I just mentioned Rav Albo suggests that the Rambam only counts Ikarim, or an Ikar is something unique to Judaism, or unique to religion, the true religion. And Rav Albo says any system would need free will. Any system of ethics would depend upon free will. Therefore, even though it's crucial, I don't count it as an Ikar. Okay, that's just an aside. But again, in the first Mamar, he deals with what should count as an Ikar. So we saw in Perek Yud where he says the three things are coming out of this Mishnah. In Perchav Gimel, he says that Tchiyat HaMetim is also a fundamental belief, but he exclusively says this is not something that logic dictates, right? Because again, reward and punishment could be covered without a bodily resurrection in some sense of Olam Haba. But he emunah mekubelet be'umah, but it is a traditional accepted belief. So it seemed that Rav Albo did not think Tchiyat HaMetim was logically crucial for Judaism, but that's part of our tradition. Since it's part of our tradition, it's counted as a fundamental belief. Okay, so this is Rabbi Albo's approach to Tchiyat HaMetim as a crucial belief. Now, we mentioned before, the Ran said, that Tchiyat HaMetim is a prerequisite to Olam Haba. Now, that might depend, of course, on how one conceives of Olam Haba. And now we'll move to the next major section of tonight's shiur. Is the world to come going to be bodily? Is it going to be physical? Or is it going to be non-corporeal? Right? There'll be some spiritual state, a soul without a body. Now, obviously, if one argues that the future existence is physical, so it's easier to say what the Ran said. Tchiyat HaMetim is a prerequisite. Right? You need to get a body back to experience the future bodily existence of Olam Haba. Conversely, of course, if one thinks that the future existence is going to be non-corporeal, non-bodily, so it's not clear exactly why Tchiyat HaMetim would be crucial, why it would even be a part of the structure. Now, this is a famous debate between Rambam and many others. Let us look at this debate right now, and we'll see the implications this has for Tchiyat HaMetim. The Rambam discusses this in many places, but perhaps the most accessible is in Hilchot Tshuva Perek Chet. In Hilchot Tshuva Perek Chet, the Rambam takes the position that the future existence, immortality, is non-physical. Is non-corporeal. There's just the nefesh. And the Rambam, characteristically, has a very intellectualist way of thinking about Olam Haba. It is about our souls contemplating the divine truth. That's what Olam Haba is, and there's no body. Now, the Rambam argues that he's got a Talmudic source for this position. We'll see that the Rambam is here more of an individual fighting with the weight of the medieval authorities. Most of them, Rav Sadia Gaon and the Ramban and Rav Meir Aleva Abu Lafia, argue that the world to come will be corporeal. Although I should point out, even those authorities that think the world to come will be corporeal don't view it as some kind of grand feat, right? The world to come is not essentially about the best pastrami sandwich one could ever imagine, right? They agree that it's about some kind of spiritual pleasure. So in that sense, they're like the Rambam. Yet they say we will have bodies. So that's the majority position in the Middle Ages. Now again, the Rambam thinks he's got a Talmudic support. What's his support? So there's Gemara in Brachot and Daf Yisayin that says, Olam haba, the world to come, ein bo achila velo shtia, it doesn't have eating and drinking, but rather, what does it have? Tzadikim yoshvim, right, the righteous will sit, v'atro tehem v'rashehem, their crown is on their heads, v'nehenin miziv hashchina, and they enjoy the splendor of the divine presence. Now the Rambam says, that's what I've been telling you. Right, look what I just said, they don't eat and drink, they don't have bodies. Now it's true, the Talmudic source did say yoshvim. Now arguably, you need a body to sit. But clearly the Rambam is not going to take yoshvim there as sitting. So the Rambam says, what is sitting? So sitting means mitsuyin below amal v'yagiyah. They'll be present without effort. Like sitting for the Rambam is a state of rest. It's very interesting what's happening here. The Rambam is doing basically what he does vis-a-vis God in his philosophy work, the Marnei Bukim. The Rambam is very adamant that God can't be corporeal. The whole first volume of Marnei Bukim, he says all these verbs about God can't, or adjectives about God, can't be taken literally. If God's fat, it doesn't mean he's fat. So here, interestingly, the Rambam is doing a similar method for people in the future existence. Sitting here connotes stability, connotes lack of effort. Right? That will be our future existence. It won't be bodily. Ashrotein b'rashein, the crown on the head, for the Rambam refers to the head as the place of the intellect. And for the Rambam, it seems like you need to understand the divine truths to make it Olam Haba. So the crown is on their head, right? They've understood these truths, and they've made it. And then they're intellectually basking in the divine radiance. This is the Rambam's reading of this Gemara. And then the Rambam says, now I've got a source that the world to come will not be bodily. We'll come back to this in a second. Obviously, for the Rambam, one raises the question, where does Tzkiyat HaMetim fit in? Don't forget, the Rambam says that Tzkiyat HaMetim is Nikah. So he seems to believe in it, even though it's not clear why it's necessary, or what its place is in his conception of Olam Haba. Again, most of the Rishonim disagree. There's an important Rishon on Sanhedrin, whose name is Rav Meir HaLevi Abu Lafia. He lived in the late 1100s, early 1200s. And he wrote a commentary called Yad Rama. In the very beginning of that chapter of Sanhedrin, of Perek HaChelek, he takes on the Rambam. And he says, first of all, he disagrees with his Rambam's reading of that Gemara. He says, if you don't have bodies, so you don't need to say, you don't need to drink, just say you don't have bodies. The whole interesting part of we won't be eating and drinking is that we will be bodily. Even though we'll be bodily, we will not be eating and drinking. That is the Rama's take on that Gemara. The Rama, again, Reish Mem Hei, Rav Meir HaLevi Abu Lafia, has two other objections to Rambam. One is a bit of a side point, although worth mentioning. He finds the Rambam a bit overly intellectualist. That the Rambam seems to say that it's all about understanding divine truths. This is how one makes it to the world to come. And Rabbi Lava says, but that's not the simple understanding of Judaism. Right? It's about performing the mitzvot. It's not about an intellectual test to get there. So this is one point that Rabbi Meir Abu Lafia makes. He also says that something very relevant to what we said last week. He says, who was involved in performing mitzvot in this world? He says, who was involved? Of course, it was the guf and the nefesh together. Let's read the passage, because it's an interesting passage here. So he says, again, this is the Adar Ramah, the beginning of the last parak of Sanhedrin. So he says, who did it? He says, Midir Adin Notenet, justice would say, l'shalim shkar l'nefesh, to pay the soul, and kach Midir Adin Notenet, l'shalim shkar l'gviyah, and also to pay reward to the body, i.e., it was body and soul together who succeeded in this world. So it's body and soul together who should receive reward. Now, I realize that Ramah says it in kind of a dualistic fashion. The body deserves its reward. The soul deserves its reward. But this might come back to a point we made last year about Gugulim, that it could be in terms of the continuity of identity. The continuity of identity is the person should be body and soul together. That's who the person is. So maybe the Ramah is making a similar point. Like, the ultimate reward should be for the person who tried hard and succeeded in this world, namely the combination of body and soul. So again, this is the Rambam's reading of the Gemara in Brachot. This is the Yad Ramah. Again, if you hold like the Yad Ramah and Rosh Chodesh, the purpose of Tzchiyat HaMetim is clear. Tzchiyat HaMetim is the step that leads to Olam Haba. We need bodies back for the purpose of the future bodily existence in Olam Haba. Whereas, if we hold like the Rambam, the purpose of Tzchiyat HaMetim becomes questionable. I should point out this is a famous controversy. The Rambam was accused of denying Tzchiyat HaMetim, and he had to write a whole letter. If one looks at a volume of the Rambam's letters, he has a famous letter called Igeret or Mamar Tzchiyat HaMetim, where he affirms his belief. He says, people misunderstood. I mean, I wrote that Tzchiyat HaMetim was Nikar. I did write that it's one of the 13 principles of belief. It's true that since I wrote that Olam Haba is non-corporeal, so some people mistakenly concluded that I'm denying Tzchiyat HaMetim. But the reality is that I am not. I am not denying Tzchiyat HaMetim. I affirm it as a belief. I believe that the bodies will be revived only to undergo another physical death, and then we'll move on to the non-corporeal existence of Olam Haba. So in this letter, the Rambam affirms his belief in Tzchiyat HaMetim. At the same time, it becomes seemingly less significant in his worldview. And the purpose of it remains an open question. Why should we believe in, why should we have Tzchiyat HaMetim if the future existence is non-corporeal? Rama would seem to have to argue that there's some last corporeal endeavor that needs to be done, and that's going to be why we have Tzchiyat HaMetim. Perhaps, actually, it fits nicely. If the Rambam, the intellect has to achieve a certain level to get to Olam Haba. So strife will grow intellectually. So perhaps, but for the Rambam, Tzchiyat HaMetim is not necessarily a logical prerequisite to Olam Haba. Now, Rav Sadia Gaon and the Ramban bring some other arguments let me start with another argument the Rambam makes. The Rambam says, I'll prove to you that there will be no body in the world to come. Let us go back to that Gemara in Brachot. Again, the Gemara in Brachot, it does not have eating and drinking. Says the Rambam, well, if there's no eating and drinking, what's the purpose of having the body? Right? I have a body for no one. What did it say about Moshe while he was on Sinai? Lechem lo achal, umayim lo shata. Here is Moshe, he's got a physical body, and he's not eating and drinking. Apparently, there is worse. There is a concept of a body, even though he's not dependent on basic physical needs, on eating and drinking. The Rambam argues against that. The Rambam, in his letter, says, but there's a difference. Moshe and Eliyahu were essentially human beings, and they used that body beforehand for physical needs. And he again, presumably, eats and drinks once again. Says the Rambam, therefore you have the other Rishonim. There's one last part about the debate that I'd like to look into, which I think is quite interesting, and then we'll try to sum it all up. And that last part of the debate is as follows. We have now seen different opinions about Tzchiyat HaMetim's role, right? Tzchiyat HaMetim might be a prerequisite for Olam Haba. You need a body to get back there. Seeing that, as Rav Yosef Albo pointed out, arguably it's not logically necessary. What's logically necessary for religion is providence and reward and punishment. But bodily resurrection might not be crucial. And indeed, Rav Albo said, I'm counting it because it's a traditional belief, not because logic compelled me to include it as fundamental. Now that raises the question, well, maybe we shouldn't have counted it. What is motivating us, let's take a Rambam, what is forcing him to include Tzchiyat HaMetim? What is forcing him to include Tzchiyat HaMetim on the list? going to raise the sound here. Okay, just raise the sound. You let me hear the. I hope that you're hearing the sound a bit better now. If you could let me know, that'd be great. So, what compels the Rambam to believe in Tchiyat HaMeitim? So here, there are a few psukim we mentioned before, such as that pasuk in Daniel, and that pasuk in Yeshayahu, and that pasuk in Of the Dry Bones. And now we raise the question, but in theory, one could take these as a metaphor. Okay, in theory, one could say this is all metaphorical. For example, we mentioned that one could say that the Dry Bones in Yechezkel is a national revival. Maybe even the psukim in Daniel and in Yeshayahu could be taken as a metaphor. So here Rav Sadia Gaon does something very interesting, which has much broader implications. Rav Sadia Gaon says, I'll give you a rule for all of Tanakh. How do you know when to interpret psukim literally? How do you know when to interpret this? The basic assumption when you read a pasuk is that it should be interpreted literally. That's the basic assumption. The word means in the face of empirical evidence, right? It's clear that in our senses that it's simply not true. If according to our senses it's simply not true, then the pasuk can't mean that. Second thing would be, if the pasuk is in hand, it cannot be taken literally, it must be a metaphor. So we've got our senses, we've got logic, then we also have internal reasons. So the Sadi Gaon says, what if the pasuk is contradicted by another pasuk? Right, one pasuk is one thing, another pasuk says a different thing. So clearly, one pasuk has to be interpreted in a non-literal fashion. One might say the same thing about divine corporeality. You could have put it in that category. The pasuk says, remember you didn't see a divine form at Sinai, so then you have to reinterpret Yad Hashem, what that really means. His fourth category is if it's against the tradition. Not another pasuk, but our tradition. So again, four things could motivate me to read a pasuk metaphorically. It's against the senses, it's against logic, it's against another pasuk, or it's against our tradition. Says Rav Sadia Gaon, in this way, is an emunot. Tchiyat HaMeitim is none of the four, that the dead will be alive. Now, one might have said it's against our senses or logic, but Rav Sadia Gaon says nothing doing. If we believe that God could create kriyato ex nihilo, yesh me'ayin, something out of nothing, why can't he bring the dead back to life? Not a logical problem at all. Therefore, I'm going to take these psukim at face value. When the psukim say God will bring those of the dust of the earth back to life in Daniel and Yeshayahu, that's what they mean. That's Rav Sadia Gaon's argument for a bodily resurrection. The Rambam has something somewhat parallel, interestingly enough, in his Ma'amar Tchiyat HaMeitim. Again, this letter defending his belief in Tchiyat HaMeitim, where the Rambam says that I'll tell you why I'm not going to interpret metaphorically. It's a very interesting distinction. He says there's a difference between something that is impossible logically and impossible in the natural order. And here again, to use divine corporeality again, the Rambam says it's logically impossible for a perfect God to be corporeal. But Rambam thinks corporeal things must become corrupt at some point, but they're not eternal. So God cannot logically be corporeal. Tchiyat HaMeitim is not a logical impossibility. It's just not found. So that's why I'm going to affirm Tchiyat HaMeitim. So that's very interesting in terms of approach to divine interpretation. We see the medieval rationalists on one end were willing to interpret something as a metaphor to be impossible, but they did not think in this case that Tchiyat HaMeitim is such a case. Let me sum up what we've done here, and then maybe in the last couple of minutes we'll see if anyone has a question. We've seen that from just the fundamental beliefs. And arguably it's rooted in that Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which says that's one of the three beliefs that exclude a Jew from the world to come. We saw that Rashi has a very harsh or radical reading, that you have to not only believe in it, believe that it's found in the Torah somewhere. We saw the Be'er Sheva deny such a thing. He points out, according to Rabbi Alba, you can even have a mistaken belief. Certainly, if you have the right beliefs, but don't think it's in the Torah. So Rashi there is quite difficult. And it's very Yisrael. Thought Rashi was talking about not psukim that are kind of forced, like Shochem Avoteka Bekam, but psukim that are more explicit, like Yishayahu and Daniel. Even so, it seems the Be'er Sheva. To have this belief but not see it as rooted in a specific pasuk in Chumash. That's because it's a prerequisite to Olam Haba, which again fits bad with all those Rishonim who think that the world to come is bodily. And therefore you need Tchir Meitim to get there. That's why it's crucial. Like, the world to come is the real place of reward and punishment, which we understand is crucial, is bodily. So you need a resurrection to get to the bodily place of reward and punishment. However, if you hold like the Rambam, that the world to come is not really bodily, so in theory, you don't really need Tchir Meitim, as Rabbi Alba points out so well. We need reward and punishment for the perfection of God. We don't necessarily need a bodily resurrection. And family to claim that he denies it. He had to write a whole letter his belief in it. Why is it there? I made one suggestion, maybe it's about the intellect, that weren't perfect, now the chance to catch up in this world and make it Olam Haba. Perhaps the Rambam simply said, well, it's a Mishnah, I'm not going to argue with the Mishnah. Again, it's a tradition, but on the one hand, it might not be logically crucial for my worldview, but being that it's an entrenched tradition, I will accept it as well. It's a crucial belief, that's a part of the purposes it might serve. Finally, we discussed some of the debates about what the world to come will be bodily. Or not? I wanted to know. Because really, that's who a human being is. A human being is a physical and spiritual entity. That's the being that will receive reward in the world to come. Viewing the body as a problem. That Judaism is not something that we discussed last week. It could be not like Socrates are trying to escape the body. The body is part of what it means to be a human being, and maybe that's even true on some level in the world to come. Granted, it won't be a place of physical eating, but it might be a place of a physical body with a soul that enjoys the splendor of divine radiance. I mean, you know, right? The body is not something sick, but it's part of what it means to be a religious human being. It's been very enjoyable learning with you once again. Maybe I'll just leave. I see I have 2 minutes left. Maybe if anyone wants to write in or say a question, I'll be happy to answer. Okay, I was just asked by one of the listeners. You mean you'd like me to email one, or should I just list the sources? I guess I'll list the sources first. The basic sources for this would be the Mishnah at the beginning of the last Perek of Sanhedrin, of Perek Achir. That's going to be the seventh Mamar of his Emunot B'Deot. The Rambam, I would say, the eighth Perek of Hilchot Tshuva, and his letter, his treatise on Tzkiyat HaMikim. Abu Lafia is his first comment on that last parak of Masechet Sanhedrin. And Rav Yosef Albo would be his first Sefer Ikarim, the 10th chapter. The sources that we discussed today, if anyone would like me to make them and send them a source sheet, I would be happy to.